Osteoporosis is one of the risk factors of going into perimenopause and menopause. And we know that hormone replacement therapy, along with traditional strength training, are really valid ways to manage the risks. But what else could we do? Well, Bones for Knife is a Feldenkrais-based method that also helps to improve bone density and bone strength. And I'm joined today by Helen Davis. She is a Bones for Life teacher and an osteoporosis sufferer who was diagnosed during her own perimenopause journey. And do stay tuned for a little later down the line in the podcast where Helen actually shares some of the exercises that she teaches. So do join us. Hey everyone, it's Clarissa here from the Thriving Through Menopause podcast. You know, as I talk to women around the world, I know that more than ever, we're looking for holistic ways to manage our menopause and to feel empowered that we're in control of our own health and healing during this vital life transition. I sit down each week with amazing guests to talk about ideas, strategies, approaches, and opportunities to help us thrive through menopause. Episodes drop every Tuesday, so I hope that you'll join us. And I have a little request for you, that if you find value from the stories, lessons, and wisdom that we share, I'd like you to support this podcast. One way you can do that is to hop on to wherever you listen to podcasts and like and subscribe and share it so that others can hear the messages too. You might want to buy me a coffee to help me keep this podcast up and running. And I'd love you to subscribe to my newsletter, Heart of Menopause, over on Substack. Don't forget, episodes drop every Tuesday, and I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being part of this community, listening to this podcast, and I hope that you enjoy the new content that's coming up in this new season. To this week's Thriving Through Menopause with me, Clarissa. I am really excited and also happy that we are going to be talking about osteoporosis, which is something that is heavily skewed female because of the changes that can happen in our hormones in menopause, and also to have not just one solution, which we know can be hormone therapy, but also other ways that we can support our bones as we age. And I'm delighted to be joined today by Helen Davis. She is a Bones for Life practitioner and a hypnotherapist. Welcome, Helen.
Thank you for having me. It's lovely to be here.
Well, it's my pleasure, because we're going to start with your perimenopause story, because you were indeed diagnosed with osteoporosis in your 50s.
I was, but my perimenopause happened a decade before that. I was, it was actually an acupuncturist I was working with at the time in my early 40s. And I was seeing her for chronic migraines that were part of my life in those days, still are to some extent. And she thought I might be in perimenopause and suggested my GP tested me, which she did. Now, this is 15 years ago. So all of that was quite ahead of where we're the curve. Unfortunately, what then happened was absolutely nothing. I was offered HRT. And as a good feminist, I said, no, thank you very much. I don't need to stay young, and didn't think about it again. And I got on with life. And it's only now, because I'm learning so much now about menopause and perimenopause, that I look back and realize how many of the symptoms I was experiencing. But because I didn't have hot flushes, even in English, British English, I didn't realize. And what happened for me was that I was going through a physical, mental, and emotional spiral. I was working a high profile within my industry job, but predominantly from home. So whenever I needed to go off and have a cry, I could do it in the privacy of my own bathroom and nobody noticed. My marriage was not going particularly well. We were struggling. And yeah, I didn't have any idea that all of that could be hormone related. And I actually ended up being diagnosed with chronic fatigue. I had 18 months, almost overnight, I went into a period of 18 months where I couldn't work at all. It then took me 2.5 years to build up to doing a little part-time work. And in that time, I discovered hypnotherapy as a client, and I really embraced the yoga practice that had been my sort of oasis of calm for an hour and a half once a week, and ended up training in both of those. And as I say, when I look back now, I realize how much of that I'm absolutely sure was connected with perimenopause. And I actually went through, well, I had my last period at 46. So as I say, it was relatively young, all of which probably among many other things, not least the huge stress that I was under through all of those years, I believe contributed to the fact that I was subsequently diagnosed with osteoporosis about 10 years later.
Wow, what a journey. And of course, as you said, 15 years ago, our knowledge, I think our knowledge as clinicians, as knowledge in the public domain, was much lower than it is today. But still, one in three women think that it's hot flashes and weight gain. And of course, what you've talked about is the mental and emotional side of perimenopause, which we know today is just so much part of our journey, and particularly our earlier perimenopause years. One of the things I think I'd ask you is, how did that make you feel? A diagnosis of osteoporosis in your 50s. I mean, I think we think, wow, you know, 60, 70, not great, but possible. But to be in your 50s, how actually did you respond to that?
I was utterly devastated. I mean, I always say flippantly that when I'd stopped crying, I started doing my research. And that's true. And that took about a week. And it didn't just stop. It's probably worth sharing how I got my diagnosis, because it's another story in itself. So funnily enough, it was almost exactly a decade after I'd had the diagnosis of chronic fatigue, which I considered myself fully recovered from, having learned at last to pace myself. And I was at home on my own, because I live alone, on a Sunday evening, and I moved rather too fast, which is a bad habit of mine, through a doorway, and I trod on the other leg of my trousers. And it's something that every woman I tell this to goes, oh, I've done that so often. Every man goes, what? So basically, moving a little too fast, I tied my feet together and I crashed to the ground, threw my arms out in front of me, as we do, and I broke both my wrists. So yeah, that was quite a big deal.
That's a huge deal, actually, to realize that you broke both your wrists, not just one, but both.
Yeah. So luckily, as a hypnotherapist and one who specializes in medical hypnosis, I had a lot of skills and tools at my hands to manage the situation. And I thought that was it. I thought that was the big disaster of that year. And because I'm a woman in my 50s and because of where I live, it was an automatic thing. I was referred for a DEXA scan. And honestly, I thought it was a formality. I was fitter and healthier than I had ever been in my life. I was a yoga teacher, for goodness sake. There was no way I'd got a problem with my bones. I knew my mother had osteoporosis and her mother had, but no. I even deferred the scan a couple of times because, first of all, I wasn't in a position to drive there, and then it was inconvenient. And I didn't even realize when they told me that I was going to get a phone call to talk about my results. Even that didn't give me a warning. And so I completely burst into tears on the nurse who rang me. And yeah, I was utterly devastated. I also noticed the language that she used, and this isn't her fault. She did exactly what she has been trained to do. But there were a couple, again, I put my hypnotherapy hat on here. There were a couple of really strong suggestions she gave me that I was in a position to deflect. And one was, it is not possible to improve bone density. All we can do is hope that it doesn't get worse. And I immediately thought, that doesn't make sense. My bones have just healed from being broken. Bones can evolve.
Yes.
It just doesn't make sense. And the other thing she said to me was, the biggest indication of falling in the future is having fallen in the past.
No.
Well, yes and no. And in my previous life, my corporate world, I was a business analyst. I know about statistics. And so I did call her out on that one. And I said, statistically, yes, someone who's fallen previously is more likely to fall again. For example, my own mother, who fell and broke her pelvis because she already had an artificial hip, so her pelvis was what broke. 6 weeks later, she fell again and broke her femur. The second fall only happened because she was already incapacitated.
Yes, yes.
But my risk of falling as a fit and healthy 56-year-old at the time was no higher the day after I'd fallen than it was the day before, unless someone made me think it was, and I got scared And then I increase my own risk.
Of course, because then we're taking precautionary sort of measures. We're tensing against the potential to fall. And then we're much more likely to fall if we're and injure ourselves if we're tense.
Absolutely. And if we, and also the subconscious doesn't understand the concept of a negative. So if we think, I mustn't fall, all the subconscious hears is fall.
Yes, of course. Absolutely. So, I mean, I think that's quite shocking, the information you would give, because firstly, we know that we can change both our bone density and strength. And it's we're going to come on and talk about what you do with Bones for Life, but it's why women are encouraged to change their diet, to take certain supplementation, particularly vitamin D and K and calcium. It's why we are encouraged to lift weights, because those things all contribute to improved muscle mass, which is linked to improved bone, and we can also improve our bone density and strength itself. So that's a bit frightening that is the medical message given. And of course, you called her out on the statistics, but because, yes, you're right, obviously, if you have a broken hip and you're a bit unstable, as you say, and a bit tense, you're going to fall, which is why I think sometimes older people fall, because they're frightened of falling again. Yeah. But also because, as we'll get on to, I know we're going to talk a bit about posture alignment, or maybe a lot about posture alignment. We also realize that when we get into this sort of shuffling mode, that, of course, we're not really supporting ourselves to be strong as we move.
Absolutely. And we stop picking our feet up properly.
Yes.
It's so all of connected.
Those
And the only other thing that the nurse, the formal advice, of course, was to go on to bisphosphonates, alendronic acid or whatever, as soon as possible. And having spent 10 years detoxing my life, the one thing I knew was, at that point, I didn't say absolutely not, but I said I need to do my research. And when I did my research, I decided that for me at my age, that was not the route that I wanted to go down.
No.
Other people obviously make a different decision on that, and I'm fully supportive of people making whatever decision's right for them, but understanding what's involved.
Exactly. And I think that's probably a general message that, you know, we need to do our research. We need to check out, does that work for me where I am right now? Because sometimes we're being offered a standard and fait accompli type offer, which may, of course, not be what we want to do. So that's a really good takeaway, if anything else, is to say, do your homework. So you were a yoga teacher, Helen, but you have pivoted away to that to work with a method that is called Bones for Life. So let's dive deep into what is Bones for Life and how is it different from yoga?
Sure. So Bones for Life is built on something called the Feldenkrais method. And I always start by saying that because most people haven't heard of it. But anyone who has, it immediately gives them a context and a thorough basis for understanding where we're coming from. Because, and I know you're familiar with the Feldenkrais method, Clarissa, but I realize a lot of the listeners won't be. So the Feldenkrais method was developed by Moshe Feldenkrais, an Israeli. He was actually a physicist. He wasn't a medical doctor. And it takes, in many ways, it takes a mechanical view of the body, and it helps the body to re-establish patterns of movement that it used to know. And that might be when we were small children. It may even be going back further in our kind of evolution. And it's actually brain training rather than muscle training. And Feldenkrais is wonderful. And I already knew about it before I broke my wrists. And in fact, although I'm not a trained Feldenkrais teacher, I went to a lot of Feldenkrais lessons. I worked with a lot of people who blended yoga and Feldenkrais. And so I brought a lot of that thinking into my classes. And as a result, my yoga classes were much, they'd always been slow and mindful, but they got even slower. We did more and more lying on the floor, which is the classic Feldenkrais approach. And I loved them. And the people who trained with me loved them. But what I realized as I did my research, exactly as you were saying, that we need to do more weight-bearing exercise. And the problem with Feldenkrais when it comes to bones is that precisely that you are lying on the floor so much of the time. And even my yoga postures, I've never done, you know, dynamic yoga. That's not my style. So I realized that my classes, although they'd, and my practice, although it had changed my life, the actual movements were not the best thing for my body at this stage. And so I still consider myself a yogi. I meditate. I do all the philosophy is how I try to live my life. But I've shifted my movement practice. And I've shifted it, as you say, to Bones for Life, which I had never heard of until I started doing my research. Bones for Life was created by a woman called Ruthie Allon, who was one of Moshe Feldenkrais's very first students. So she was a very senior Feldenkrais teacher during the 70s and the 80s. And in the 80s, she started developing this program because people had said to her, does Feldenkrais help with osteoporosis? And hand on heart, she had to say, actually, no, not with the bone building side. And so she did a huge amount of research into what bones need for growth, how to stimulate them. And she studied all sorts of diverse groups of people, specifically astronauts who went, the first group of astronauts who went to the space station who lost bone density, who were able, with appropriate exercises, to rebuild the majority of the density they'd lost. Now, obviously, they're very young and fit, different from most of us who end up with one of these diagnoses. But still, the principle is there. Bone density can be rebuilt. And she also spent a lot of time in East Africa, and she really studied the Maasai people of East Africa and how they move, and particularly how they carry weights. The women particularly carry incredible weights on their head without this compression of the spine that we see in the Western world all the time. And they jump, and that tends to be more a male thing, but the Maasai, the men jump.
Yes.
And yet they have what almost appears to be a bit of an immunity to osteoporosis. So she studied, not to osteoporosis, to fractures. Again, I've been researching, it's very hard to find the data on this. So I can't give you the exact facts because I'm still trying to find them myself. But my understanding is they do get lower bone density, but they don't fracture to the degree that we do in the West.
No, so they've got greater bone strength, possibly,
exactly,
from the jumping, which is often what we see personal trainers telling us to do as well now, is jumping is actually good for our bones.
So from the jumping and then from the carrying of a weight, because when you carry a weight on your head, your spine lifts up into it. And we literally have a number of processes in Bones for Life, which are slightly more advanced ones, where you put a very easy, carryable weight. It's a fabric wrap that we make into a crown that you put around the head. And then you walk, you do various walking processes with it. And when you take it off, you feel your whole spine lift up. It's amazing.
How fascinating. What a wonderful thing to look at a very traditional culture and the way in which they move and learn from that. And I think that's very inspiring, because sometimes traditions, which we have certainly brushed away, that remain in places like Africa and in India too, where people carry a lot on their heads and always have done. These things have obviously, that's been because that's a great place, it's a very strong place to carry from, but actually have a long-term health benefit or a protective benefit for the people that take them. I think that's wonderful, Helen.
And it's fascinating because we think of it as something that has never been endemic in our culture, but it's not true. I mean, I saw a photograph a while ago of a woman in Liverpool carrying a huge bundle of washing on her head. And I think it was the 1930s or something. It's not as far back as we tend to think it is.
No. I mean, I think we think of that as being something that might have happened hundreds of years ago, but 1930,
exactly.
Well, my mother was born by then. So, you know, something we can see, it's only just over 100 years ago. So that's really fascinating. Are you looking for balance, inner harmony, a sense of well-being without needing to resort to quick fixes or medication-only approaches? Well, you're not alone. Clear guidance on how to thrive through menopause is hard to come by, and it's scattered all over the place. But my new book, Beyond Hormones, 7 Holistic Ways to Thrive Through Menopause, is a beacon for women. We're not just offering coping mechanisms, but practical pathways to manage perimenopause and menopause holistically. So if you're looking for a scientifically backed yet digestible guide to thriving through menopause, look no further. The book is available everywhere that you can buy books. Why haven't we heard of bones?
It's Like Feldenkrais, it's relatively unknown. It's a bit of a best-kept secret thing. Both Moshe and Ruthie were Israeli, and it's much better known in Israel. It's much better known in mainland Europe. It's getting more known in the United States. Here in the UK, it's very, very... There's very little awareness of either of them. I was very excited recently to discover there is a Feldenkrais practitioner in my town, and I was surprised and excited to discover that. In fact, at the moment, so I'm very open about the fact that I'm still doing my Bones for Life teacher training. It's a 2-year course. I'm now well over halfway through it, and including myself and my fellow students, so I'm one of about 40 people in the whole of the UK and Ireland who is currently registered to teach Bones for Life. And I'm probably, and I'm not exaggerating, I'm probably one of 40 yoga teachers in my local town. So people just don't have the awareness. And this is why I've made the decision that I am teaching online, because I can reach more people and spread the word more by teaching online, by talking to people like you, than by sticking a poster up in my local town and booking a hall. So I want to get the word out, and I'm as passionate about telling people that this exists as I am about getting them to come and actually learn it with me.
Yeah, and I think that's a great mission, because there's clearly benefits, and maybe we'd like to outline what some of those benefits of Bones for Life are beyond just improved bone density and strength. I'd love you to sort of maybe give me some of the top benefits that have come from the work that Ruthie has done, but also what you're learning as you go through your practitioner training.
Sure. So the key thing that Ruthie has explained, and that I teach my students, because I think it's really important to understand what's happening. So what our bones need for growth it's all to do with the circulation of the blood moving through the system. And the blood circulation is driven by two things. It's driven by gravity, which obviously takes it down physically, like it does everything, and then movement, dynamic movement, which sends that blood around the system. So dynamic confrontation with gravity is what creates the wear and tear that our bones need to keep rebuilding themselves. And this is why weight-bearing activity is so important. And this is also why, when you look at a group of women, particularly, or people who have been diagnosed with osteoporosis, generally they will trend towards the lighter side of the spectrum, because we are physically carrying less weight. It's not it can be all other sorts of other reasons, but being slim, slightly built, this is also why it's a very known risk for people who experience eating disorders. In life, because if you're not carrying a lot of weight, your body is, by default, your bones are carrying less weight as they move around. So adding weight is always great. The issue is, if you add weight or dynamic activity and your posture is out of alignment, you are simply confirming the poor alignment. So if you've already started to get a bit of a stoop, and then you send lots of gravitational force through your body, either by lifting weights or by running or whatever it is, there's a risk that you're simply reinforcing that position. So equally important in Bones for Life is, as you said earlier, postural alignment. And obviously that's something that comes with yoga as well. And through my yoga practice, I had learned to find my own alignment and to feel my own alignment. And I could see it in other students in the room. But if someone said to me, so how do I do that myself? The only answer I had was, keep practicing yoga and it'll come, which is true, but it's not very quick. What Ruthie did, which is so incredible, is she found ways of teaching us really quickly to find and improve the alignment in our own bodies. And what I've discovered, and what I'm hearing time and time again from my Bones for Life students, is that they are noticing the number of people who say, oh, I've just realized that when I walk, I jut my chin out. And now I'm doing it differently. I had one lady who said to me, I was in the cinema the other night, and I suddenly remembered that thing we do with the neck, because I realized I was all slumped. So I did that thing, which I'm going to show you in a minute.
Yes.
And felt more comfortable. I was sitting more comfortably because I was sitting upright and my spine was aligned. And we've got out of the habit of thinking it's possible to sit with your spine aligned and be comfortable. We think you need to be slumped back to be comfortable.
No. And of course, a lot of us are sitting like this in computers. We're seeing a lot of people. By the time we're in midlife now, we've got phone necks. We've got raised shoulders. We find it difficult. And I see that with the people I teach Qigong, like they find it really hard to sort of, I'm going to just quickly do that, but lift your arms above your head without doing this.
Yeah.
You know, very, because we seem to be having to make those adjustments as we rarely move because we've got really bad basic posture. And we had Tracy Sider, who's a posture alignment coach, on here a few weeks ago talking about posture. So it's interesting how this kind of is a core message that I want the listeners to listen to, that our posture is super important, but it isn't kind of the posture we were taught from grandma, which was stand up straight with a book on your head kind of thing. It's a much more subtle adjusting of our posture, which is going to flow through to, as you said, our bones in this case, and the density and strength of our bones, but in other areas, things like our ability to breathe better, yep. A better ability to manage our pelvic floor. So it flows through in many, many spaces.
And it also comes back to what we were talking before about this thing about falling, because when our posture is improved, we're more likely to pick our feet up. And again, I've had specific feedback from, and there's one client I remember particularly who said that whenever she went for a walk with her husband, he would spend the whole time saying, oh, mind that tree root, mind this, mind that. And as she's been doing this program with me, he has stopped worrying about her in the same way, because he can see that she's walking in a completely different way. One of my students described it as, instead of rushing everywhere, she feels like she glides elegantly when she walks. And this is all stuff that comes, you know, these are people who came to me for because they had been diagnosed with osteoporosis. And these are the side effects that they're getting. And Ruthie coined this wonderful phrase, biological optimism. And it also taps into that thing about power poses. You know, if we're all hunched and crunched, we feel like a victim. But when we learn to open up and to be facing the world, everything seems more possible. And so, and I always say to people, you know, as alongside Bones for Life, walk every day. Just make sure you're walking. And if you do decide you want to do things like lift weights, I don't do it at the moment because I loathe the gym, but I'm not ruling out the fact that one day I might find a shift in my motivation and get myself doing it, because I know it would be helpful. But yeah. Everything I've learned from Bones for Life about alignment will mean that if I do that, I will know how to do it without causing any harm.
Exactly. And I think that is critical, because having a good postural alignment is, as you say, going to help us in other areas so that we can be better at yoga, can't we?
Absolutely.
Get more out of our Pilates. Pilates is quite good for postural alignment too. But also, as you say, as women are being encouraged more and more to strength train but have poor posture, and we hear it everywhere. There's everywhere. Like, I've had no end of people come and talk brilliantly about the need for strength training and women to reverse that muscle mass of the osteo and pinea as well. But poor posture can in fact mean injury or not doing it correctly, which is actually negating potentially the benefits of lifting the weights. So yeah. I think it's super important. I would love you to show us some simple Bones for Life exercises that the listeners could actually, and people who are viewing this on video, you will get this more, but you can maybe talk us through it as well, so that we can actually practice and start getting into some better alignment.
I'd love to. And actually, what I would say is, for people who are listening to this on audio, who are in a position to actually join in, it is perfectly possible to do this just with the words. The wonderful thing about Bones for Life, like Feldenkrais, is this is about your experience. This isn't look at the shape I'm making, can you copy me? This is do these things that I can talk you through, and what do you feel? Because your experience is your experience, and that's what this is all about. It's starting to notice, connecting more with your own body, and actually noticing what's going on. So it is absolutely possible to do this on audio, but of course, if you have got the video, then that'll make your brain feel it's easier to do so.
Yeah, okay. We hope people might join in as well, Helen, if they feel so inclined.
I do hope so. Okay. So the first thing I'm going to do is what I mentioned, this thing with the neck. So this is all about aligning the neck. So we can do this sitting. I usually stand, but I think it's easy just to do it sitting in this context at the moment. So the first thing I'm going to ask you to do is, if you are sitting, bring your feet nice to them, firmly to the floor. If you're wearing heels, it's quite a good idea of any kind. It's quite a good idea to have bare feet with any of these things, or just socks. But so you can feel you're supported by your feet. And I'm going to ask you to bring your hand, either hand, to the back of your neck, and just rest your hand on the back of your neck so that the little finger is kind of nestled into your hairline, and the middle finger, index fingers, find the really knobbly vertebrae at the base of the neck. And then just let the thumb come forward so it rests on or towards the collarbone. And that just allows the arm to relax a little. And you can even give that shoulder a bit of permission to release. Otherwise, we have a tendency to tense up. Now, this hand is simply there to provide feedback. So from this position, start with your eyes straight out ahead to the horizon. And I'd like you to just very gently look down towards the floor. Imagine that your fingers are glued to your neck as you do that, and then bring your eyes back up again. So as you do that, imagining, and do that a few times, as you do that, imagining your fingers are glued to the skin, perhaps you feel how the fingers just open a little bit. They come a little further apart as you look down and close a little as you come back up to center. I felt that. Okay. And then we're going to do the same thing. So keep your eyes looking straight ahead, and we're going to look up. So don't strain. Just, you don't need to go up very far, just a few degrees, 45 degrees, no more, and back to center. And this time, perhaps you feel your fingers closing a little as you look up.
Yes.
Lovely. And next time you come back to center, just release your arm. You can give it a shake. Good tip here. If you're using your arm and hand for things and they get a bit tired, if you rub your hand on your body anywhere, it just helps to release the tension in the arm and makes it feel less tired.
Amazing.
Okay. So that's giving us the feedback about what's happening in our neck. When we look forward and the fingers are opening, does that feel to you that that would be your lengthening or contracting?
That's a bit of a lengthening for me.
Yeah, exactly. So that lengthening is the opening of the fingers. The contracting is the closing of the fingers. And if we're looking to align our spine and make us the space that we need and get it as optimally positioned as possible, would you expect we'd want to be lengthening or contracting?
Slightly lengthening.
Exactly. So that's what we're looking for. We're looking for ways of lengthening without looking down. So So first of all, I'm going to ask you just have a play yourself. So again, anyone who's following along, bring that hand back to the back of the neck. If you want to swap hands, that's absolutely fine. Finger in the hairline, middle finger, index finger, finding the knobbly vertebrae, thumb just resting forward towards the collarbone, relax the shoulder. And if you want to drop, to just look down again once more to feel that opening of the fingers, and then just see whether there's anything that you can do for yourself that allows you to find that lengthening whilst your eyes still stay out at horizon level. And some people will find that that's something they can instinctively do, particularly if they're used to doing things that involve being very aware of their body. Clarissa, I imagine you probably can do that without any problem. Mm-hmm. But for other people, that's something that they just don't have the tools to do at this point, and that's absolutely fine. So I've got a couple of ways to help you find ways of doing it.
Yes.
So the first thing we're going to do is bring the fingers and the thumb of the other hand, just touch your chin. So the fingers are on the top of the chin, your thumb's holding it from underneath. So your chin is just gently held between your thumb and fingers. Eyes looking straight at the horizon. Now imagine that your chin is a drawer in the chest of drawers, and it's just a tiny bit open. And you're very slightly, just a millimetre or two, going to push back with the finger and thumb to take your chin back towards the hand behind your neck. And as you do that, so what are you feeling, Clarissa?
That I was a little taller. Interesting what I feel. I feel the separation between rib and hip there too. So there's space opening up in my body.
Lovely. So if you haven't already, everybody else, just let your hands go again. We're making a bit more space. And with your level of body awareness, as you say, you can feel it all the way down. Some other people will feel that, some people won't. Some people won't have felt anything, and that's fine. So I've got one more way of showing you, because everybody finds different ones that work for them.
Exactly.
If you want to use the other hand this time, then that's absolutely fine. Again, little finger in the hairline, middle index fingers somewhere around those knobbly vertebrae, thumb coming around to the front, relax the shoulder. Make sure your eyes are out at vertical, at horizontal again, out towards the horizon. Mm-hmm. And this time bring the other hand to rest on your chest. And we're going to kind of scoop in and up with that hand. And it's difficult to do this and talk at the same time and think about breathing. But if you can, breathe out as you do it. And maybe that also brings a little bit of lengthening in behind the neck. And we're using the hand because the fingers are much more sensitive than the neck. Most of us aren't used to feeling this in the neck. But the fingers, that slight subtle opening of the fingers, helps us to feel it. And then finally, one way that we can do it, you can let the hand on the chest go. The other thing you can do is, if you haven't found any of those are helping, you can literally keep those fingers glued to your neck and just try opening the fingers themselves a little bit. Do it almost mechanically. And maybe that gives you a little bit of a lift. And then
you can definitely feel when you did that last one, when we're doing the scooping, and that's maybe me, but you feel the lengthening in the upper back, which is an area that can be very tight for me too. But that just opened the upper back. And then when we did that with the fingers opening, you can just feel like the vertebrae in the neck just separated that. You know, it's a fraction, it's a real feel thing, but fantastic, Helen. I mean, they're, you know, three very simple moves in terms of, you know, there's not a huge amount of being able to be a yogi or learn something. We can make a huge difference to
absolutely
how we feel.
What I'd love to do, if we have the time for it,
we do,
is to, so we do similar things with the lumbar, because the neck and the lumbar are the two most vulnerable curves in the body. Yeah. We don't have time to go into the lumbar today, but what we can do is use what we've learned in the neck to bring in the dynamic movement, the dynamic confrontation with gravity, because obviously this is the postural side.
Yes.
The flagship movement in Bones for Life is bouncing on heels. And this is something which a lot of people talk about as a good thing for bones health anyway. Ruthie brought in various ways of refining it, one of which, as I say, is this alignment, because if you do that without aligning your body first, you can find it's actually uncomfortable. Or making things worse. So bearing in mind, we haven't done the lumbar one, but I am actually going to have to stand up for this.
I'm excited. Yes.
And I will talk you through it.
Wonderful.
So try to standing. Just stand with your feet, hip distance apart. And notice if your knees are pushed hard back. Most of us tend to push our knees back, our ischial knees, without even realizing it. So I'm going to invite you to very gently soften the knees. We're not bending them. It's just taking that pressure off. And even as you do that, you may find that the lumbar spine drops a little, the chest lifts a little. You might find that little alignment you've already been working on coming in. So from here, we're going to just align the neck again in standing. So bring the hand back where we were, finger of the hairline, middle finger is on the vertebrae, thumb forward. And just find whatever way worked for you to find that little lift in the neck. Remember, it only has to be in millimeters. It's tiny. Particularly when you start, and then let that go. If you keep your hand there, you can. And we're going to do a little double bounce. So, pump, pump, pump on the heels. And we're only coming about a centimetre off the ground. Pump, pump, one more, pump, pump, and pause. And then again, come back to that aligning with the neck. You might find it slightly different when you've done a little bit of movement. As you lift up, let it go. Keep the hand there if you find that helpful. Soften the knees again, same quad you push back if you're not used to it. And again. Oh, just stand. Actually, when I teach this, I will get people to do a little test beforehand and see how their standing feels. Maybe imagine a line hanging from the crown of their head down to the ground and see where that moves to. Walking around a little bit and seeing how it feels. And all of these things together really help improve, bring awareness to how the shifts that we're feeling. And one other thing, the pum-pums, the actual sound, I always encourage people, in fact, I very strongly invite them to join me in making a sound, because when you go pum-pum, you have to breathe out. And we all have a tendency to hold our breath when we're doing things that we're concentrating on. So getting into the habit of saying pum-pum as you do your bounces helps you keep breathing. And if you do that three rounds of 2 times 10, so we did a little less than 10, but if you do 10 yeah. bounces, pause, 10 bounces, pause, and you do that 3 times a day with aligned neck and lumbar, if you do nothing else, that is a fantastic start to giving your body the dynamic confrontation with gravity that the skeleton needs.
Oh, wow. That was fantastic. I love that. Thank you so much, Helen, for sharing that. So hopefully people who are just listening we'll still get along. And if you watch the video, yeah, I really encourage that we do that. As you said, 10 times, 3 times a day. Gosh, it only takes a minute. You can do it at your desk. You can do it in the morning when you get up. What a wonderful way to start to work towards better alignment, to start to get, I think, rightly so, Helen, more awareness of how we're standing, how we're holding things like our neck, and obviously the lumbar region, which is where we get the problems. If you go to, I mean, any osteopath or chiropractor will say it's necks and lower backs that they're dealing with. And we know lower back problems are massive. They're massive for women. They're a big part of our perimenopause symptoms. And he, as you said, shown some ways that we can start by improving our alignment. We can also reduce pain in these areas and some of the pressure that we feel. And we're doing our bones, of course, a lot of good. That's wonderful.
I'm so glad you enjoyed it.
I did. So having shown us this, I would ask yourself, is that little exercise the one thing that you encourage listeners to do to start supporting their bone health?
First and foremost, it's keep moving. So walk every day, even if it's 20 minutes around the block. And the more you can do to support your body and learn about alignment, so that when you are walking, you're getting support from you're actually generating that dynamic confrontation with gravity. So yes, I'm going to cheat and say 2 things, because walking and doing the 3 lots of bouncing on heels. And I always suggest each time you walk into the bathroom, just clean your teeth. So morning and evening, when you go to clean your teeth, 2 lots of 10 bouncing on heels, and once during your walk.
How fantastic we can all fit that into our day. I think it's so much easier for us to build habits around something we're already doing, as opposed to thinking, oh, I need to do the extra, because that often disappears out the window, doesn't it? But we're all going to go and brush our teeth. We're all going to go for a walk, or maybe we're just in our kitchen waiting for a kettle to boil, and we can do these things. Helen, it's been such a delight talking to you and learning about Bones for Life, and I think how that can benefit us and how it also can be complementary to other things that we are doing to improve our bone health and to protect ourselves against osteoporosis, which is, if we know that, it can be a very crippling disease. How can people get in touch with you and learn more about you and start working with you, particularly as you become a certified practitioner here?
So my website is onestepforward.today. My business name is One Step Forward because that's what I help people do with the 2 sides of my business, the Bones for Life and the hypnotherapy. So onestepforward.today. I have created an introduction to Bones for Life course because when I started trying to learn this, I found some great teachers, but the only way I could do it was to sign up for a pretty intensive, quite expensive course. And I wanted to create something that would give people the opportunity to play around with this in their own time. So I've created an online course called Introduction to Bones for Life, which has over 6 hours of content, but it's broken down into 5 to 20 minute lessons. And as you've seen, you don't need to do an hour at a time. You can just do a little bit here and there. And that's available through my website. It's self-study. It's been hugely popular with people and really helping them to get a feel for whether this is something they want to do more of.
That's fantastic. Well, we're going to share that in the show notes. And I know all your social media links will be there as well. And I just love this conversation. I love what the possibility of Bones for Life bring. I think, you know, it's, as we say, we all need a toolkit in perimenopause and menopause, and I would definitely encourage you to consider adding Bones for Life to your toolkit. Thank you, Helen.
Thank you, Clarissa.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. I loved Helen's demonstrations and the making the pump sound so you breathe out and don't hold your breath. And I also really loved the connection to cultural traditions, that things we've done in the past, like carry heavy loads on our head, and obviously we don't do that today, has a beneficial effect and helps to reduce fractures. So things to think about, really inspired to give some of those simple exercises a go and weave them into my daily routine. Next week, I'm joined by Jo Brown Kirst, and we're going to be talking about menopausal skin and why it's not all about fine lines and wrinkles. She will share her experience and how it's engaged her to start a company called Modern Age Skin. If you enjoyed this podcast, don't forget to like, share, and review it so that others can find it and gain benefit from the wonderful advice I get from these different experts every single week. Until next time, go well.